Hey, what's going on? Welcome to The Doug Show. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today I'm going to give you an update on a few different areas. Number one, I'll let you know what's going on with the Etsy print-on-demand shop that I'm setting up, the challenges that I'm having, the things that I'm doing wrong, and the very small amount of success that I'm having. I've also dabbled in another print-on-demand area, which is a little bit disconnected, but we'll get into that. I'll also talk about reading. Earlier this year, I think I was like, oh, I'm going to read more books and blah, blah, blah. And I have been reading a lot, but not as much as I thought I was going to be. And I've still been getting more books. So kind of have a backlog at this point. And then I'll also just give you a little update on things that I'm into, number one, but also things that you may want to create content about. And it all kind of fits together in an online sort of business kind of way. In the last episode, I think I talked about, you know, business failing and my revenue dropping dramatically. And, you know, part of it is doing less work. Part of it is purely intentional. The other part is the volatility of online business. And most people that listen and watch the show, you've been following along for a little while. So, you know, niche sites, content websites were huge for many years, big industry. There were huge businesses set up to help support the industry, maybe like link building or content improvement, or maybe someone came up with a WordPress plugin that specifically served the Amazon affiliate community, that sort of thing. So as that business kind of went away, like people shift. And the thing is, all the people are still out there. Many people stopped consuming content around this specific area, and I'm sure they're consuming something else. But I have so many questions that popped up. A lot of people emailed me. A lot of people left comments on YouTube, basically asking what is working now. So you're telling me that niche sites don't work. What's working now? Well, there's a lot of stuff that is working. It's really hard to tell if you're on the YouTube side of the world or actually, I mean, I guess it's either YouTube or social media is probably most of the places where people are getting information. There could be some newsletters out there, but essentially, you know, you still have to watch out for the same kind of stuff where people are selling something specific and you can't really tell if they're telling the truth because they have a financial incentive to tell you that whatever it is working. And gosh, I mean, I remember when I first got started, I bought this horrible like link building software, but I remember watching a guy like doing a demo and he was like, this is how I set it up. And I mean, to describe it now, it sounds so stupid. Like why did we even think that it would work? I mean, it kind of did work, but it was short-lived. But anyway, the software would like set up a blogspot.com blog and then like publish garbage over there. And then links would be inserted and there were multiple tiers of links. And it was just nonsense. The whole thing was nonsense just to create a few layers of like websites and websites that pointed to other websites that eventually pointed to your website. And Google would actually rank that stuff. So kind of crazy, but I do remember like watching someone set everything up. It took hours. The software cost like $500 a year or something like that. And I was like, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. And I now think back, I'm like, this dude probably didn't know what the fuck he was talking about at all. He knew how to use the software, but there's a strong chance he was getting paid $250 because the software cost $500. And back in those days, the commission rates were often 50%. So there's a good chance, like every time he sold one of those, he got half of the revenue. And it was so, like I said, it was so silly, like thinking back and describing it out loud, like why why would that be a good use of time or anything? Like, it's really not providing much value in the world. So anyway, it's hard to tell if people are telling the truth, if they're earning $250 every time you buy some bullshit software or a course or whatever. And, you know, actually I'm thinking back to no one that I interviewed, but someone that I chatted with, and they were like, oh yeah, like we're doing, you know, we've moved over to like TikTok affiliate and we have a course set up and blah, blah, blah. Or someone was like, hey, yeah, we're doing awesome on Instagram. We set up a course. It's $500 to build whatever, get 100,000 followers in 30 days and blah, blah, blah. It's just all like so sensational. And these motherfuckers are good salespeople and they make it sound so convincing, so believable. Sometimes there's a grain of truth. There's often a grain of truth, but then it's really a flash in the pan, especially with like the Instagram thing that I'm thinking of. It's like algorithms change so quickly. It's just like this person had a 60-day run of like great success and growth. And then I was like, you haven't proved the longevity on this at all. And in fact, I think you know there's no longevity. Anyway, so I'm describing a conversation that I did have. But anyway, the whole point is there's a lot of people still trying to sell like crazy stuff. So it's hard to tell. And I've interviewed people and I see like the newsletter business, the local newsletter business seems legit. Newsletters in general, like there's writing, there's networking. You can see the potential. It's email based. So it's very clear that you can have ads in the emails or promote a product that is legit, like an actual physical product, or maybe it is a local newsletter and there's painters that want to do a promo. Like that's very clear. You can send the email out, reach people in the local audience and advertise a business. Like that all makes sense. Online directories, I think there could be a path there, but I think there's some exaggeration on like either how effective it is or how easy and that sort of thing. That said, I think there's still a path. I mean, it could be sort of a local directory or like industry specific. That sort of stuff does make sense to me. So anyway, it's tough out there and I'm not sure what is working because I'm not trying everything. And I have like low interest to actually try a bunch of different businesses. I mean, it's just not what I want to do at this point in time. I think it could be an interesting way to build a, you know, a YouTube channel or whatever kind of content you want to create that would work. And I'll come around to like content that maybe is viable or at least an approach. And partially I'll talk about things that I'm into, but let's talk about the Etsy store. So I am going along with the Giftable, I think it's Gift Lab. I'll put a link in the description here, but basically I interviewed Emily a couple times. So Emily Odio Sutton, she made something like $500,000 in 2 years over on Etsy with essentially print on demand and some digital products. And most of these are like gift based. Now, the course is very good. It shows you how to set things up and the keyword research you might do. Very basic if you're seasoned in the SEO keyword research space. Like this sort of keyword research is much simpler than what we were doing for niche sites and content websites in general. The course is very good as far as like giving you tips and moving you through. I went through a lot of it mostly on the setup side, but I need to actually pop back in because I am struggling in a couple areas. So I have a few products set up. It's quick to set up a shop, but you have two main areas. So I think it's Printable. Is it Printable? What is it called? It is Printify. Yeah, it's Printify. It's Printify over there. And essentially that hooks you up with print on demand vendors. And it's a pretty good platform overall. It links up directly and in a very straightforward way to Etsy. So they have a great interface, and you can like create a product over on Printify and say, publish it over on Etsy. And then a few minutes later, it'll pop up on your store. I had my store set up over on Etsy and Printify set up as well with my billing information, all that stuff within like 2 hours. Very straightforward. I don't think I made any major mistakes or anything. And the way it works is someone would find your shop or whatever, they would buy something over on Etsy, and then Etsy tells Printify to order this product. Here is the information about it and who to ship to and all that stuff. And then you're actually charged. So like Printify bills me. And then I think somehow the payments are reconciled. So Etsy accepts a payment, and then eventually I'm able to get money out, but like I have to pay upfront for the Printify. So I'm actually billed, but that's like the cost of goods. And then later I sell that. So, and it's printed on demand. So it's not like I have inventory sitting around or anything like that. So this is the general idea of how this works and why you have to have like two different interfaces and two different accounts, and they're linked up and they talk to each other. And once it's set up, it's pretty straightforward, but that is the thing you have to figure out. Cause I knew that I could set up a Etsy store for years, right? But I was like, how do they get the print on demand stuff? Do I actually have to like make the shirts and then have them here at my house and send them out? You don't have to do that at all. It's all fulfilled by the vendors out there, and you know, the shipping costs are included and all that kind of thing. So pretty straightforward. The one issue that I am having is the interface. So I'm like looking at the Printify interface over there, and there's so many different areas, and I don't know where to go for everything. And again, it's probably just a few minute video that I need to watch inside Gift Lab, but I have not done it like many people. I just need to read the manual, but for whatever reason, I'm like, okay, I got it kind of going. I'll click around, and I've been able to figure out how to like order samples and stuff. And Printify will send you a promo every now and then. It's like, hey, you want to order a sample? You save 10 bucks. Downside is I am trying to get like really nice material. So I'm doing t-shirts and sweatshirts in the short term, because that is what my audience was asking for specifically. So I want to make sure it's high quality and good material, so it's more expensive. So like the hoodies that I found, they're like $50 or $60. Like my cost is $50 or $60. So it's like really thick and really soft, and they're very nice sweatshirts. Not like, I want it to be comfortable. I hate it when, especially if you're paying, but I hate to even get a free t-shirt and then it's kind of rough, or I don't feel like it's comfortable or whatever. So anyway, high quality stuff. I'm able to order samples. I'm able to get kind of an idea of some of the analytics and other details around just stats and sales and that sort of thing. But there's a bunch of other stuff over here, and I'm like, I don't know where everything is at. So that's just on the Printify side. Over on the Etsy side, same deal. Tons of areas to get lost in, and I just don't know where to go for certain things. Or, I mean, the thing is, like, it's operating, but I may be able to do a better job in certain areas, but I just don't know where to go. So the interfaces are not necessarily complicated. There's just a lot of stuff. And I think if you think back, maybe the first time that you were installing WordPress and you have like a cPanel with all these different areas you can go into. Some are highly technical, some are completely irrelevant. Some areas are things you're going to go to once a year. And there's just an overwhelming amount of places to go. And I don't know what is important. So again, you can kind of imagine it like when you first got hosting, when you first got WordPress, you're like, oh, there's all these plugins I can get. There's all these different things out there. And I mean, Printify is a platform and it's linked up with vendors, like probably thousands of vendors. It could be, you know, clothing, it could be mugs, or it could be coasters or whatever, journals, whatever, like any kind of thing that can be printed on demand. Like, it's that stuff. So there's so many different products that you can get into. So it's a little confusing, a little overwhelming, but I'm only paying attention to the parts that are essential right now, which is why I'm sort of like unaware of things that I can go to. Maybe it won't matter. Maybe it will. In a few months, I'll be like, oh yeah, if I just would have done these couple things, I could have just paid attention here. I mentioned I would figure out how to get samples, but that took me a while to figure out like where to click around and stuff like that. Not that it was hard to find. It's just, I didn't know where to go. And there's like a million places you can click. I probably could have just watched a video on it and figured it out faster than me just clicking around. So one other thing that I'm doing sort of intentionally that I know is not the best way to do it is I'm creating the products that I want to create in the short term. and I'm not doing any keyword research, which is like essential to the way that Emily approached her successful stores that she set up. But the last interview that I did with her, she did mention like I guess she backed me up. Like she didn't say this unprompted, but I was like, hey, I'm setting up a shop. I actually have like maybe three different distinct like niches or audiences that I could approach, but I don't want to set up three shops. I know that's going to be more overhead, even though it could be fairly straightforward. And if I link things up in a certain way, like it should be straightforward, but I know that it's more overhead. It's similar. Again, if someone's like, hey, I want to set up a niche site. This is back in the day, of course. Set up a niche site and they're like, you know what? I'm going to set up 30 niche sites, not 30, but even three. Like, hey, I'm going to set up three sites. And they're like, ah, you know, I'm doing this work anyway. It's all the same. I have a team working on it. And I would tell them, you still realize, well, they did not. They would ignore me. But I would say like, hey, there's still admin and there's still overhead for each one of the sites. So you think it's not much more work, but it turns out it's a little more than you think. Maybe it's just the mental load knowing that there's, you know, three sites out there instead of just like one that you're focusing on. So I asked Emily, what if I just put these three different niches that don't really fit together in one shop and see how it goes? And she was like, yeah, like that could be okay. The reality is people are probably going to either go directly there. Like if I'm linking to a specific t-shirt, then they're just going to go directly to that t-shirt. Maybe if they're curious, they'll browse around, but they're probably just going to get that one shirt. Similarly, if someone is searching for a specific product, they type it in the search in Etsy, they'll land on the product and then they'll get that product. Probably not going to browse around and stumble upon the other products unless they're just really curious. So that's fine. It's not a huge deal. And she said that could be okay. That said, I'm not doing any keyword research at this point. I'm just like, this is stuff that I want. Or in the case of the shirts and the hoodies and stuff, these are products that people in my audience have literally asked for. Like, hey, I want to get a t-shirt that's like a wicking material that I could work out in with your logo. So I created, that was one of the first ones I created. That is literally something people ask for. So that's what I did. I don't know if it'll be like a big hit. I mean, people are not randomly going trying to find my podcast and then buying the merch for it. It's like they're in the audience and I'm giving them a way to buy shirts and other stuff like that. I am going to one of these financial independence retreats that I go to called Camp Fi coming up in a few weeks. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to get some temporary tattoos. So the place that I got most of my stickers made is called Sticker Mule. Is that the name of it? Yeah, I think it's Sticker Mule. And I'll put a link for that. But I think the stickers are some of the highest quality that I've seen. They're like dishwasher safe and all that. They have other products too. I think, you know, t-shirts, other print-on-demand stuff. But they also have temporary tattoos. So I actually created a few temporary tattoos and I'm going to put them on my other non-tattooed arm. And I think it'll be pretty funny. They're sort of silly. They're like inside jokes for the podcast listeners, and they're inside jokes for people in the financial independence community. So kind of funny, definitely an insider thing. Otherwise, it'll just look totally silly. So like when I go out, it'll just look ridiculous. And I've put a temporary tattoo on, I think, one other time. It lasted a few days. And these are like full on color, like bright. So that'll be pretty cool. And they're reasonable size. I mean, I got them in the mail yesterday. I was trying to like just sort of place them on my arm and see how much space they'll take up. They're pretty big. So I think it'll be fun. And the thing is like that, I don't know, maybe I could link it up to Etsy, but I don't think so. So I have like a shop on Sticker Mule, and then I have my Etsy shop, and it's a little confusing, but I mean, it gives people a way to buy stuff either way. And I don't have to fulfill it. I don't have to like have a bunch of these in stock at my house and then send them out, print on demand. They do all the fulfilling. It works pretty well. One quick plug. I was reminded of this the other day. So I still have some hosting because I have a couple websites associated with this podcast, the other podcast. And the thing is, I let some of my other hosting packages just go away. Literally, a site was live and it might be making like $20 a month. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to let it go. And it's crazy when I think back how much money was invested in it, tens of thousands of dollars. And literally now time has passed. The world has changed. People don't go to websites in the same way. Google SEO, blah, blah, blah. So I literally turned off the renewal and I was just like, I'm just going to let it go away. That said, I still have hosting, and people probably still do need hosting out there for, I mean, people are creating apps and other stuff, but it's still, I think, viable and a good idea, depending on what you're doing, to have a website where you can publish things. And I'm trying to simplify and reduce expenses and all that kind of stuff, letting domains go, letting hosting go. And I'll plug MDD hosting. So that's where I still have a hosting account. That is one of the, gosh, I must have had an account with them for 10 years at this point. And I've had multiple hosting accounts with them. And they're a small company. I think they're out of Indiana. Basically, you'll be able to get a pretty good deal with them. And they don't jack up the prices as much as some of the other companies. Because I was thinking, oh yeah, you know, you used to be able to get hosting for like a few dollars per month with the intro deal. And the prices have gone up pretty dramatically. So if you are looking to switch to cheaper hosting, I'll put my link in there. I'm an affiliate, so I get a commission if you do sign up. But MDD Hosting, small company, very quick to get support, and any issues that you might run into, like I had like a billing question, I was just sent a support ticket, and within an hour or two, I got an answer back. So small company, they do a nice job. And I mean, it's almost like a mom and pop. I know, I'm sure they get, you know, their server space from AWS, just like everybody else, but a little plug for MDD Hosting. Again, just smaller company, not one of the huge ones that, you know, you sign up for the super cheap referral, first year bonus thing. And then next thing you know, it's like, I think like whatever I just canceled, I think it was going to be like, it's going to be like $400 for the year. So, you know, it's a decent chunk. Plus they had some other add-on stuff. Anyway, check it out if you do need hosting. If you're thinking to switch to cheaper hosting, it's one that you should have a look at. Okay. Hopefully in a few weeks, I'll have a good update on what I'm doing with the Etsy stuff. The reality is I have a couple other designs that I have created in Canva, but I haven't created like the new products yet. Fairly straightforward. I'm not doing anything too fancy, but one thing that I think could be good. Like I've basically created like stickers with like city names on them and people like it. I've been giving them out around town here, but I was like, oh, those t-shirts would be nice. I could also do mugs and I could do other stuff like that. Again, location-based places that I have lived, for example. So again, they're purely like, it's like my background. So it's kind of interesting, but obviously other people live in those cities and or vacation there, but that's just a little idea. And I mean, you could extend this out. I live in Colorado. There's a lot of mountains and people would have like the names of mountains and like little mountain in the background. So there's an area there that I think could be interesting. I'm not going to sell, you know, millions or even thousands of any one of those. However, at scale, if you actually have a lot of these different products, people are like, oh yeah, like I went on vacation to that city and I find it very interesting. So I just need to sit down, drink a bunch of coffee and create these products and like kind of get it rolling. So moving on to the reading update. At the beginning of the year, I said I was going to read more and like spend, I think I was like, oh, I'll just, you know, read like an hour a day. And I've gone up and down. I've been like more active doing other stuff. So I have been playing a lot more guitar and like hanging out with like people. And I've actually been trying to do just like more lightly social stuff. Even if it's, you know, like last week I texted my buddy. I'm like, hey, do you want to like, let's grab a coffee and we'll just like walk in the morning. So stuff like that. It's really easy for us to like not take the initiative to ask. And people are usually down. And these are my friends. So it's like not... it's not like weird or putting myself out too much or anything like that. It's just like, hey, we haven't talked in a while. Let's go do this thing. Been playing music, guitar, that sort of stuff. So it's not fully wasted, but I have been ordering books way more often. So I'll like, I started reading a book and they reference another book and then I'll pop over to eBay and then just see if they have it available as a used book, which often they do. And you could buy these books for like $4 to $5, depending on like what the book is. So I'm going to Yellowstone before too long. Been many times. One of my favorite national parks, my favorite national park. So I've seen these books in the past in the gift shop, like this one here, Death in Yellowstone, and its accidents in full hardiness in the first national park. And I haven't purchased these because, you know, you go to the gift store and the list price on here is $18.95, which is not actually too bad for this thick book. However, a lot of times it'll cost even more in the shop. And I'm like, ah, I'm just excited because I'm in the shop and all that. But anyway, I think I bought this for like $4. And then I like to read books before I go on a trip to those places. The other one that I got is the Slash autobiography here, the guitarist from Guns N' Roses. One of my heroes and my buddy was telling me that he was reading it either for the, he may have been reading it again, but it's been out for a few years. So anyway, he was reading it and he was like, dude, you got to check out this book. So, and he's a huge GNR fan. I think he's a couple years older than me. So I think he got more into Guns N' Roses than I did. But anyway, I was like, I really did love Guns N' Roses. I didn't get into the music as much, the deeper cuts and that sort of thing. But I did like them a lot. I was just a little bit younger. I read the Duff book and that was great. I didn't realize how much I liked Duff. But anyway, I got that book, the Slash book, which should be very fun to read. I was shocked. The Slash book, number one, it has some like pictures in it. Not a ton. I mean, it's mostly text, but there's a handful of pictures in here. The thing is, this book is 450 some odd pages. It's way longer than I expected. And it's not like giant print or anything like that. There's a handful of photos. It's not like filled with photos. So anyway, I was a little surprised. I'm excited to get into that book. I should read a little bit more, but there's a bunch of other stuff I'm doing too. So quick side note, I had like a little sort of a home, really was a car project, but we're about to go on a drive. And I was like, you know what? Our I sold my truck. We have the CRV that's about 14 years old, and the headlights are, they got hazy, you know, the plastic, it gets weathered, sand hits it from driving, and it's just not as clear. A lot of times you'll see this haze on sort of older cars, and it's fairly straightforward. You can get like a polishing kit and it removes the haze. So it's just, you know, sanding it down essentially, and then going to very, very fine grit to the point where you're using a very light abrasive polish and it shines it right up. So I'd worked on that yesterday. At the same time, I upgraded our headlight bulbs. So they just had the stock bulbs in there. And I know you can get better bulbs that are either brighter or maybe the pattern is a little bit different. So I upgraded to maybe, I don't remember there, you know, you always have it several levels and different tiers. So the cheapest ones and the most expensive ones, we got somewhere near the top, which still wasn't too expensive. I think it was like $60 for the two bulbs. So I worked on that yesterday, but I was thinking, you know, this would be a very reasonable side hustle if you have the tools. It doesn't take very long to polish up someone's headlights, and you literally can like walk around, and I'm sure, you know, different shops have this as an add-on, but you know, if you're scrappy, if I was a kid again, like that would be something where I'm like, hey, yeah, I'll wash your car. Yeah, I see your headlights are foggy and they have a haze, and I could polish them up and I'll charge you $100 for it. If you had all the materials that you needed, the sandpaper and the other polishing stuff, and you had the equipment and you did this, like now that I've gone through it, I could probably do it in half the time now that I understand the full process and I'm not reading the instructions and all that. Not complicated at all. You could probably do a pretty good job in like 15 minutes or so, 15, 20 minutes, depending on how bad it is. I mean, if you look at it, if there were like scratches or other big things that you had to work on, you would charge more, you would have to sand more down, but essentially great side hustle, manual labor, something that people either, you know, don't have the know-how or they don't have the time to invest in it. But I was at the shop anyway, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to take a look at that. And yeah, so it took a little while, but very shiny. I was shocked at the difference. We haven't driven at night yet, but I think we'll be able to see a pretty big difference. Heck, now in the summer, I mean, it doesn't get dark until pretty late. The sun comes up early, so it's probably low likelihood that we're going to be driving at night until like the fall. Now that I think about it, yeah, we're not out that late very often. Okay, as we wrap it up here, I wanted to mention an approach that may not shock you, it may sound obvious, but as many folks know, I watch a lot of YouTube. When I'm working out, I'll have YouTube on. I watch different vloggers, and I go in and out of like different topic areas. Right now, like I said, I'm into guitar stuff. So I watch people that do like guitar reviews. I watch people that do like pedal reviews and like equipment and stuff like that. And there's a great channel, JHS Pedals, and they're out of Kansas City, I believe. I've seen some of their videos in the past, but I didn't really pay much attention. And then in the last little bit, maybe the last couple few months, I started to get more into pedals, and I saw them popping up more and more. They were on other people's channels. And the thing is, JHS Pedals, they do awesome videos, very informative, great, just like nerdy information. So they don't talk about it much, but I assume that the people that are pedal builders, these are all electrical engineers, basically. And the crazy thing is, so I have a computer engineering degree. I ended up really enjoying the analog circuits class and a lot of like double E stuff. So I took more classes in that analog circuit design area and did a lot of labs. And like, actually my like senior project was around like tube amps and all these concepts of like amplification as it applies for like musical instruments and stuff. So it's funny, as I was listening to these guys talk, I'm like, they're so nerdy and they're talking about all the stuff that I studied in college and then pretty much never used it. I mean, I had a weird sort of focus, and I also like didn't focus on like the circuit design, where, you know, some of my friends, maybe they worked at Intel or AMD or other like chip designers. So I did actually really well in those classes and pretty good in the double E class. I did very well in the double E classes too, but I ended up doing neither of those because I didn't really do engineering. I went into consulting. Anyway, people are just obsessed with whatever they're obsessed with. And as I watch like different channels in different areas, so the other stuff that I'm into, I've been watching a lot of van lines stuff. So people either living in a van or RVs or campers, or they're on the road in some capacity. And then there's different like splits of, you know, people that live on the road, but it's like you have the van life people. There's some people that just like live in a car. And they've, you know, maybe they take out the back seats and they put a mattress in there and they're like literally living in like a small SUV, which blows. I mean, usually they're younger people, but not always. But I'm like, I could not fucking imagine doing that now. I like financial independence. Some of those get a little under my skin slash they're talking about the nuances of, yeah, they're just trying to like get views on YouTube. So I've started to like back away a little bit on those, but some are more interesting. A lot of it's regurgitated stuff and you see this a lot, but the overall idea here is whoever's creating the content on these channels, they are obsessed with it. So the pedal people are super into pedals. They're geeking out over, you know, what transistors are being used, and like it's so detailed and over the head of like so many people. Like there was a live stream with a couple of these designer engineers, and they were literally like showing the waveforms, and they were showing like what happens if you change transistors or different op amps, or if you use an LED and blah blah blah. Super in depth, where I even had an education in that area. And I'm like, I know the words that they're using, but I don't remember, you know, the cause and effect or the design implications of using like one op amp versus another. So obviously, if people did not have a double E background, they would have absolutely no clue what they were talking about. But people watched, like thousands of people watched, and encourage you, if you play guitar at all, go over to the JHS Pedals YouTube channel. Very funny videos. They are smart. They're very smart, and there's a lot of dry humor. There's a lot of inside jokes. It looks like they're having a good time, and it's pretty amazing, like the level of sort of quality of the pedals and the people that use the pedals and that sort of thing. And then like having the channel, and, you know, they've been in business for many years. I'm not sure how long, but a lot of these people started as hobbyists. So Josh, the founder over at JHS, he like started modifying like pre-existing pedals. I think this is like the standard route. So someone has some electronics background. You don't have to be a double E, by the way. Like you could read stuff and understand and watch videos and like all that kind of thing. It gets pretty hairy, but like you don't have to have a double E degree, right? You just have to know electronics and be obsessed with it. And then you could learn all this shit. So I'm looking at some of my pedals on the floor. Basically, you learn how to modify a pedal. Maybe you're like, oh yeah, if you use a different potentiometer, then you'll have like a different range that you can use. Or maybe if you switch out this transistor, you put a different resistor in there, like you'll create a low pass filter, or you change the capacitor or whatever. So people would modify these existing pedals, and they would slowly tweak it and then understand how to design pedals. So he started that way, started modifying pedals, and then started designing his own pedals, and then started the YouTube channel. And then I don't know the full path, just kind of picked it up along the way. But people are obsessed with the thing that they're into. And the thing is, other people are obsessed. Other people are out there watching the content. Even if, you know, I watch the van life stuff. I'm not going to live in a van. I think it's interesting. Usually they're going to like cool places and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, like many folks emailed me, you started watching or listening to the podcast because of niche site material or SEO ideas or some other entrepreneurship thing. But here we are. At some point, you kind of just follow along because you like to hear the stories or whatever my approach is. And I appreciate the support. A lot of people sent emails encouraging stuff from the last episode where I was like, the business is failing. It's all okay. Like everything's going to be fine. And I'll be sharing some of the stuff that I'm working on. Hopefully, we'll be able to make this work out. There'll be enough revenue coming in so that I'm not, you know, treating money or treating this as a hobby where I'm like, okay, it's going to cost money for me to produce this. I want it to cover its cost. And that's not a huge ask there, especially bringing the editing in-house where I'm doing it myself. That said, if you have any questions out there, if you have ideas, if you have questions about the Etsy store, other things like that, let me know. I'll put a link for MDD hosting if you want to check it out, see if that's a good fit for you. They have various packages, various levels, depending on what you need. I'll also put a link to Gift Lab. That's the course that I'm going through for the print-on-demand giftables approach that I am taking. And I think that's it. I'm an affiliate for both of those, so I get a commission. You know the drill. Catch you next week.